This is Alan Karpik on Golden Black Radio Memories, and still looking for a better name for this show if anybody has any great ideas. But this is our kind of going to be our weekly look back at a historical perspective on Purdue sports, something that I'm old enough to be able to do some of this, and my memory is better for 1960s and 70s stuff than it is for 2019 stuff, as I often say. But I want to thank our sponsors, and that, of course, is Follett's Purdue West and Follett's Purdue Bookstores, Purdue Federal Credit Union and the good folks there, 6th Street Dive, First Source Bank, East End Grill, and Charter's Remaxability Plus. And we thank you for sponsoring this show. And I want to have four or five items and kind of trying not to ramble too much here, but five items that kind of hit me as we look forward to tonight's season opening game against Nevada. And I think I'll start with season openers. And we've done some research this week in terms of some of the ones that really jump off the page at me and what are relevant about it. Purdue's last time the Boilermakers have won on the West Coast. And I know we'll debate whether Nevada's on the West Coast or not. I get that. But I'm going to call it the West Coast. But Purdue's last win on the West Coast, I believe, 1961 against Washington in a 13-6 win. A sophomore quarterback named Ron DeGravio. Jack Mollenkopf's sixth or seventh season, I believe it was. Ron Meyer, who was a longtime Purdue assistant, Colts and Patriots head coach that just passed away in the last year, was a defensive back on that team and back the offensive back as well. And Purdue wins that game on the road. But I think there are a couple other season opening games on the West Coast that I remember probably more vividly. Certainly 1971, Purdue-Washington, a game that was on ABC, a rarity at that time. ABC did basically one game a week, and the Boilermakers opened up the season in Seattle in one of the great fun, you know, kind of a shootout game for in today's term. Purdue loses 38-35. Just couldn't match Washington score for score. Sonny Sixkiller, the quarterback for the Huskies, led the home team down the field at the end to beat Purdue. Gary Danielson was his junior quarterback, had a big passing day. Of course, in 71, he actually, I believe, led the Big Ten in passing, though he was hurt for much of the season for the Boilermakers. Otis Armstrong, Darrell Stingley had long touchdowns, as I recall. There's a lot of optimism about Purdue after that game. A lot of optimism in the 71 season, as it turns out. I remember the Boiler game plan with a little rose on it, buttons that we used to have. And that team started out 3-2, finished 3-7, kind of a snake bit in Bob DeMoss's second season, and lost a lot of close games. Close games to Michigan, a heartbreaking loss in the rain to Notre Dame, 8-7. The week after the Washington game, as I recall, all those factors bring back my memories for season openers. And I think you go back also, obviously, 1998 and a season opener at USC on the West Coast. I think it's still I'm still sweating from that one. It was the warmest I can ever remember. It was the warmest game recorded in terms of Purdue football history. 99 degrees at kickoff, and I think kickoff was like at 11 o'clock in L.A. time that day. Drew Brees leads Purdue down the field in his first game as a starting quarterback. Purdue scores first, leads at halftime, but loses to USC. And USC, I believe, Chad Morton returned the opening kickoff for a touchdown, beats Purdue 27-17. But you knew Drew Brees was for real in that game as Purdue lost. I guess that was kind of a, as in today's word, week zero game, because it was a Pigskin Classic game that Purdue played the Trojans in a game that on ABC, as I recall. You know, so those are some of my memories, and I'm sure that there are other ones of great season openers, but from West Coast standpoint, that's what stands out to me. Another factor, obscure and maybe silly, but then again, if you're listening to this podcast, you might be interested in that kind of stuff. But elevation, greatest games, or where has Purdue played in greater elevation than it will play tonight? It's never happened, at least not that I can find. The Boilermakers at 4,500 feet elevation tonight. But I found it interesting this week that the greatest elevation that Purdue's played in up till tonight was at the Sun Bowl, 3,800 feet of elevation in El Paso. Of course, most of those times Purdue was down in El Paso for a week or so heading into the game, at least four or five games before the Sun Bowl. Some of the best bowl trips Purdue's ever had was in El Paso. They treated Purdue great, and Joe Tiller loved it down there. Purdue only won one out of three games, but losing it to Washington State in 2001 right after 9/11. I remember that game vividly. 2002, a great game. Purdue beats Washington 34-24, coincidentally by the same score that Washington beat Purdue basically a year and 11 months earlier in the Rose Bowl. And then, of course, 2004, Purdue could not hold back Arizona State and lose to the Sun Devils in that game, in Kyle Orton's last game as a Boilermaker quarterback. And that was a tough one, as I recall as well. But elevation, that was the second highest. Third highest, you might guess, it is actually in Tucson, Arizona. Purdue played in 2005, opened up their road. It was a road opener and a 31-24 win over Arizona. And that, I believe Arizona's at about 20, or Tucson's at about 2,500 feet elevation. And then I got corrected on a message boards this week, but it's correct, Pitt. The next highest, and only about 1,200 feet elevation. Purdue's played at Pitt a couple of times. The most recent time, 1985. That was a season opener and a made-for-television game against Pitt. Purdue loses on ESPN. I believe it was 36-35. Jim Everett is kind of short-armed a two-point, after having a very good game, short-armed a two-point conversion pass to Jack Berry. He was alone in the end zone that probably would have given Purdue the victory. And that game was kind of a little bit of the beginning of the end for Leon Burtnett, because Purdue was coming off that 84 season where it won 7 out of 12 games, the only Purdue team, or at least the first Purdue team, I think still the only Purdue football team, to win against Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Michigan in the same season. Great turnaround year in 84. A lot of optimism in 85, but Purdue loses that game, loses some other close games to Iowa, to Michigan State, that spelled the end and ends up going under 500 and not making a bowl. And, of course, Burtnett the following year is fired in a week 9, I believe it was, after the Michigan game, or before the Michigan game in 1986. I'm digressing all over the place, but that's kind of my memories of elevation games and season opener. But one thing I found interesting, in the Big Ten, who would you guess is the two biggest elevations? You'd probably guess Penn State, but I believe Penn State is slightly lower in elevation than Nebraska. And Nebraska, Penn State are the two highest elevations, but just around that 1,100-foot level. Google can be your friend in this deal. You can look up just about anything quickly, and we were able to do that. Tonight's game against Nevada will be interesting because it may be the smallest crowd in a long time to witness a Purdue football game. Mackey Stadium only seats 27,000. Now, I got asked on the message boards, is that the smallest stadium Purdue's played in ever? No, not just by a few hundred seats. At least the capacity of the Glass Bowl at Toledo, I think, was 26-1. This Mackey Stadium, 27,000. They have not filled that stadium. I think they're only at about 60% capacity last year at 17,000 a game. So it will be interesting to see what the crowd is tonight. Purdue's smallest crowd. Purdue's two games in Toledo. Purdue played in 1997 in Joe Tiller's debut when the Rockets thumped Purdue before that great turnaround season. That game was at over capacity. 27-7 were at that game. And then when Purdue returned in Joe Tiller's last game coaching in his home city of Toledo in 2007, Purdue and Dustin Keller, Dorian Bryant had big games there, Curtis Painter, et cetera, blew out Toledo in the season opener, I think 52-21. And that game was played, I think, in front of 26-7. But still, tonight, I think it's going to be smaller. That you ask about the last time Purdue played under 20,000 fans. I believe that was 1977 at Northwestern, 17,700. That game was actually not on TV. It was a made, Purdue was a rare television game at that time. Again, not many television games at that time. Mark Herman, the sensational freshman quarterback, ABC wanted to get him on TV. They picked that game. Purdue beats Northwestern, a pretty hapless program at the time, 28-16 in that one, a crowd of 17,700. I know they had a crowd of 17,000 in the Cotton Bowl in 1965 when Purdue was actually number one in one of the polls after beating Notre Dame. And they go down and kind of lay an egg of sort, tie SMU and Hayden Fry and its great slot back Jerry Levias. 14-14 in a small crowd at the Cotton Bowl. That was certainly one of them. The smallest crowd people asking about in the Daryl Hazel era was announced at 30,000 plus against Northwestern in 2014. I know that the scan counts for some of those games later on, and maybe that game as well, were well under 20,000. It's hard to believe how much that's changed in terms of Ross Age Stadium enthusiasm, and I really wasn't convinced that it would turn around as fast as it did, but that's a topic for another day. Top 10-point favorites on the road. When has Purdue been a 10-point favorite on the road against a non-conference team? You probably, if you read our site, you know the answer to this. If you read Tom Dienhardt's work, you know the answer to this, but of course that was 1999. Purdue at Central Florida opened the season as a, I think it was 16-point favorite in that one. That was the year after Purdue had drubbed Central Florida and its quarterback Dante Culpepper in Ross-Ade Stadium 35-7. Well, they beat him badly down at the Citrus Bowl 47-13. That game was actually close at halftime. Purdue blew him out in the second half with thanks to junior quarterback Drew Brees. A lot of hype and interest, obviously, going into that game. I do remember, I think it was a muffed field goal or something happened. I can't remember exactly, but Travis Dorse, I think, had his only career touchdown pass to Chris Randolph, a blocking tight end in that one as Purdue blew out the Knights 47-13. Purdue has won seven of its last nine games as a 10-point road favorite, but it's only been that, had that distinction twice since 2007, and that was both those times were last year. 2018 at Illinois, Purdue covered the spread, so to speak. We're talking a lot of gambling these days anymore, but 46-7 win at Illinois, a very impressive victory. But it wasn't so impressive the last time Purdue was a 10-point favorite on the road. Of course, that game at Minnesota last year in the freezing cold, Purdue loses 41-10, embarrasses itself, really, really worst performance by a long shot. Maybe, well, I shouldn't say that because it didn't get much better in Nashville, obviously, several weeks later. But certainly at the time, Purdue's worst regular season performances, they get just absolutely thumped by Minnesota. Purdue a 10.5 favorite. Then you have to go back to 2007. Now, Purdue was not a 10-point favorite at that game in Toledo, but they were a game at Minnesota, 45-31, win in 2007. Des Tardy opened that game with returning the kickoff for a touchdown. And like I said, the last nine times they have won seven of those games, they've all been Big Ten games, Purdue as a 10-point road favorite. Hype before season. When is the last time I've heard more hype before a season? It's pretty good last year, but I would argue, obviously, this year there's probably more interest, and we just all have to wait so dang long for the season to start that it kind of can't help but build up. So I'll put that up there. Certainly 2005, when the Orlando Sentinel picked Purdue as the preseason national champion, and the Boilermakers actually started that season off sort of well. They won a couple games to start the year before Notre Dame came in and embarrassed them, but there was a lot of hype heading into that season, a lot of hype heading into the 1999 season. You would say the 2000 season as well, but the 99 season kind of had a subdued ending that maybe have tempered things a little bit. A lot of hype heading into the 2003 season. Joe Tiller said that after Purdue won the Sun Bowl against Washington, that he had never had, that was where the term manage expectations came from heading into the 2003 season. Purdue loses to Bowling Green to open that season at home, as we recall. Purdue ended up having a very good year, 9-4, lost some close games, but came within an eyelash of going to the Rose Bowl that year. And might have been Joe Tiller's most talented team, certainly his best defense with Sean Phillips and Craig Terrell and Gilbert Gardner and Nico Joko DeVitus and Stuart Schweigert and Landon Johnson, and I know I've forgotten somebody in there, but a very, very good defense there. And of course, Kyle Orton, and he managed Purdue's football, did not throw the ball as much in 03, but they lost a season opener. But there was a lot of hype going into that year, a lot of hype, like I said, in 99. You go back to 1979, I certainly remember the Wisconsin game to open that season. And though it wasn't quite a sellout, there was a ton of enthusiasm after Purdue's great turnaround year and its 8-2-1 record against in 1978 under Jim Young. And Purdue was ranked in the top 10 heading into the Wisconsin game, blew out the Badgers to open the season in a game that was kind of a revenge game because the year before Purdue had been tied, and it really, in essence, cost Purdue a trip to the Rose Bowl in 78 when it blew a 24-6 lead at Camp Randall, and were tied in the following year. And that to open the season in 79, Purdue blew out Wisconsin 41-20. A lot of hype going into that season. And then probably no season more than 1968 when Purdue was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Leroy Keyes was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Purdue was the number one team, at least in one of the polls. They beat Notre Dame in week two as one of the number one teams in a battle of number one teams. Probably no season had more hype going into that. So those are my memories for this week. Thanks for listening, and as I rambled on, but it's a fun thing for me to do, maybe a cathartic of sorts. And want to thank our sponsors, of course, Purdue Federal Credit Union, First Source Bank. Also, we want to thank East End Grill, The Dive Restaurant, Charters Team, Remax, Ability Plus, and Follett's Purdue Bookstores for their sponsors of our Gold and Black podcast. Make sure you listen to our weekly podcast on Mondays and Fridays, but also our Express. You'll be hearing Tom Dienhart's thoughts after games. Brian Newbert as well will be doing that a lot during basketball season, and I'm going to work to keep this up as a weekly feature on our site and to our subscribers, not only to us on iTunes, et cetera, or to wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, but also on our site. So thanks for listening, all, and we'll be watching closely tonight in what I'm sure will be an interesting game.